Welcome to the Middle East Report, your connection to truthful reporting on Israel and the Middle East. I'm John Riley. Each week, we bring you information about current events happening in Israel. We try to connect you with the people, places, and geography of what you read about in the Word of God. It's so important that you do that. And today, I am happy to have a good friend of mine, pastor of Calvary Central OC in Costa Mesa, California, Barry Stegner. He is the host of The Lineup, which is a great program on YouTube you don't want to miss. It discusses world events and biblical prophecy each week. Barry is the author of 6 books, including The Time of the Signs, A Chronology of Earth's Final Events, and they speak at conferences and retreats all around the world. Pastor Barry, it is so good to connect with you again and talk about what's happening in Israel, and there is a lot going on.
Yes, there is. And John, thanks so much for having me. It's always a privilege to be on with you.
Right here at the top of the Middle East Report, we have to talk about this political earthquake that has happened here in the United States of America. You had one administration that was awful for Israel, and now you've got a totally new administration here that seems to be very good for Israel, the Trump administration in regards to Israel. Tell us what your thoughts are about this new Trump administration and how you see them, you know, going towards Israel and their policies.
Well, John, it's interesting to see a very Trumpish type administration just picking up right where they left off with the move of the embassy, the U.S. embassy, to the city of Jerusalem, the eternal capital of Israel. And now he is basically undone much of what Biden had done and allowed for the shipment of the 2,000-pound bombs. His first international guest will be Netanyahu. So it seems as though, you know, things are going to move in the direction they were headed in the first place with all the positive things happening with the Abraham Accords and countries signing on. And, you know, there are still some reservations with some of the countries, Saudi Arabia in particular. But Trump seems to have a pretty solid relationship with MBS, Mohammed bin Salman. And, you know, so I would expect to see more moves in the same direction that we saw in his previous term as president, which is generally positive for the nation of Israel.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned a meeting between President Trump and Netanyahu, and I don't know how long it took. It was like 2 or 3 years or something like that. It was crazy for Biden to finally get a meeting with Netanyahu. It's like he just, no, I'm not going to talk to you. And it's pretty crazy, the change here that we see between these two administrations.
Well, it didn't take long, and you're right. I think it's interesting that many had labeled Biden's administration as Obama 2.0 or 3.0, the third term for Obama. And he carried on with much the same type of attitude toward Israel as President Obama did. There was always some kind of rub there. And, you know, looking at what and how Biden handled that critical relationship in the Middle East. Here you've got Israel, the only democracy in the whole of the Middle East, and they were treated by the previous administration as though they were the problem. And, just watching things transition so quickly is really a wonderful thing to see. And, you know, watching the things that have happened thus far can only give us hope that things are going to continue in a positive direction between the U.S. and the nation of Israel.
You know, it's amazing the people that Mr. Trump has surrounded himself with. And right off the bat, I'm thinking of Marco Rubio, who is the Secretary of State now, and he was unanimously approved and confirmed there as the Secretary of State. How do you think he's going to do in for, you know, relationships towards Israel?
Well, I think he's going to continue with, you know, the attitude that Trump has. And, you know, the relationship is going to be pretty much across the cabinet, you know, because Trump is, I think he learned a lot last time about the importance of those who are close to you. And I think going beyond just simply vetting, but, you know, having that which he should have had in his first term as president, which was a loyalty from those whom he appointed. And, you know, I don't think anybody has to agree 100% with anybody in order to advance, you know, the cause that is right in our relationship. And I think Rubio is going to stand with Trump and look at that relationship. I mean, he's got very outspoken as his about his relationship with the Lord. And, you know, I think anybody that has the spirit of the living God in them is going to watch things as they unfold and see the place of Israel, and I think therefore take a pro-Israel stand, you know, because that's really where this whole thing is headed. The world is kind of drawing down to what was prophesied by Zechariah, you know, and Israel is going to become the focal point of the whole of the world. And sadly, to the whole of the world, it's going to be a burdensome stone. I think we're still headed in that direction.
Well, we, of course, need to keep our eyes on Israel, and we are doing that. And I want you to, you know, share your thoughts just as an overview of where you see Israel right now and all of these conflicts that they are dealing with and all the things that they've had to deal with, literally having missiles shot at them from Iran and all of these different conflicts that they have going on. Just your thoughts right now as an overview of where, you know, Israel is in regards to some of the wars they're facing.
Well, John, I think things are going to continue as they have, in especially in the recent years, the past couple of decades, you know, where we've had the intifadas, the constant strife between Gaza or the Palestinians and Israel, you know, the incendiary balloons, the constant attacks and harassments and all the other things we've seen. I don't think that's going to change. I think there may be a window where things calm down, but that's the status quo. That's the way it's gone, you know, for these past couple of decades. I think the northern border will continue to be problematic. We still see military exchanges that are taking place with Lebanon. That pager and walkie-talkie thing that happened with the years of planning necessary to bring that about was pretty significant. Obviously, I think, you know, God is helping the nation of Israel and, you know, giving them the wisdom to do these kind of things. But I don't see any real change. I think we'll see windows where, you know, things are going to be as they are right now to a degree, and, you know, calm down some. But this is the history. You know, you have to remember five nations attacked Israel on the same day they declared statehood on May 14th, 1948. And it's been pretty much that all along. Biblically speaking, we do know that where everything is headed is to a major conflict with the nations named in the Ezekiel war scenario 38 and 39 of that prophetic book.
And I can't wait to talk about that. We're going to talk a whole lot about prophecy, how things are lining up here in just a bit. So much going on there in the land of Israel. And Barry, right now we have a ceasefire in Gaza. Gaza, that strip of land there that is filled with, or was filled with, a lot of Hamas demonic terrorists, a lot less now. But we've got the ceasefire going on right now with Israel. And this, of course, all stems from the war that began on October 7, 2023, when over 3,000 demonic terrorists came across the border to Israel, slaughtered innocent Jewish people, over 1,200 of them. They're still holding captives there. Your thoughts, you know, about the ceasefire and what's going on? I've talked to a lot of people in Israel, and they're torn. You know, they want the hostages back, but they also want Hamas gone.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, looking at what has happened since the hundreds of thousands of Gazans have returned, you know, to some of the different cities where they've had the opportunity to go back and see what is actually not left, has been a great recruiting tool for Hamas. And they are signing up with Hamas instead of, you know, wanting to see their ouster. They're joining arms with them because of the destruction of their homes and the infrastructure and all that. And, you know, so I don't think this is going to be, you know, okay, well, we need to settle down and the people need to, you know, move away from this type of mentality of death of the Jews is the only resolution that we're going to be happy with. And the, you know, the river to the sea mantra and all that. And, you know, it's been kind of interesting because one of the released hostages, one of these girls that has gone home, she made a rather startling statement. And I get this question fairly frequently. And that is, you know, why do people not see the difference in Hamas and the Palestinians? And what this young woman said after enduring, you know, 470 some odd days of captivity, she said she was spit on and cursed by 4-year-olds and 8-year-olds, and the hatred for the Jews was implanted in them as little children. And her conclusion was, You know, there are not just, you know, Hamas terrorists. The Palestinians and Hamas are one and the same. There are 2 million terrorists in the Gaza Strip. So, you know, kind of an interesting, you know, perception. You know, I don't know that you could get any closer to seeing what is going on and what the reality is than watching it firsthand for those well over a year, 400 and some odd days that she endured all that.
Yeah, it's just awful what the hostages have gone through, more and more of them coming back because of the ceasefire. And talk to a lot of people in Israel. Some of them say this is a very bad deal for Israel, but they want the hostages back. And, you know, you mentioned these Palestinians coming back to their homes, which are destroyed. And the reason that is the case is because these Hamas demonic terrorists hid inside their homes. They put tunnels underneath their homes. They put weapons into their homes. And so what else is Israel going to do, you know, except to root these people out? There's more tunnels there than the New York subway there in Gaza right now. And I want to ask you this question. I've asked a few other people this question, Barry, but why hasn't Israel yet, in a sense, won the war there in Gaza? It just seems like, I mean, they've obviously made progress, but after the ceasefire, what I saw in the news was these Hamas terrorists, you know, in these beautiful uniforms, at least maybe that was propaganda, I don't know, you know, nice trucks. But it seems like a lot of people are saying, well, why hasn't Israel won yet? What do you think the future is? You know, who's going to rule Hamas? I mean, these are big questions.
Well, I think the answer to the question about why haven't they decisively won this battle is the hostages. I mean, there's a value for life that's present in Israel that isn't present in the Gaza Strip because, one, you know, these people have been training their children to be martyrs because that's the one guaranteed manner by which you can arrive in paradise is to die for Allah. And so here you've got this culture of death. And that's interacting with the culture of life and the value of life. I mean, you know, if we look at how this exchange has gone, it's just, for me personally, it's beyond bizarre. But, you know, we're not there boots on the ground. We're not there watching all this happen. But to exchange a handful of hostages for hundreds of murderers is beyond bizarre. But that's the difference between the Israeli perspective and the value of life and those of the Hamas and Palestinian mindset. So, you know, the future, I think, you know, when you have nothing to go back to, I think that, you know, we've been hearing all of this discussion about, you know, migrating, you know, Palestinians to other countries. And the truth of the matter is, you know, it's kind of interesting. We hear so much about the border fence and all that. But anybody that's seen pictures of the border fence with Egypt, I think could quickly understand about how people feel about allowing the Palestinians into their country. And other Arab nations aren't taking any of them back. So they're talking about sending them to other countries, you know, much like we've seen with the Syrian civil war and countries taking in migrants. So, you know, when there's nothing to come back to, I think that's that possibly you know, a motivation for what Israel has done. And, you know, it's interesting, John, I had somebody ask me just the other day, you know, it was a younger person and they kind of had that whole mentality about, you know, distinguishing between the Palestinians and Hamas and not understanding that, you know, this group was voted into power. And, you know, their comment about a disproportionate response. And, you know, it kind of struck me and I thought and answered the guy. I said, you know, that's how you win a war. You win a war with a disproportionate response. You win by outdoing your adversary. And, you know, nobody goes into war hoping for a tie. You go into a war hoping for a decisive victory. And I think maybe, you know, rather than just, you know, the scorched earth type of thing, you know, including those who live there, I think just destroying the infrastructure may be a portion of what Israel has attempted to do to keep them from coming back into power, since there'll be no place to hide, no homes to tunnel under, no hospitals to have control centers in, and all of that. You know, if it's basically demolished, so we'll see. But I don't see Israel allowing Hamas to regain or retain control.
Pastor Barry is the pastor of Calvary Central OC in Costa Mesa. That's who we're talking to today, and I want to encourage you to check out his podcast show, The Lineup. It discusses world events, biblical prophecy each week, and so many other things. And you can go to YouTube, just put in his name, Barry Stagner, S-T-A-G-N-E-R, and it'll pop up right there. And you can join that channel, and you can get The Lineup, where he discusses all of these prophetic things that are happening from the Word of God. Not just that, but he discusses the things that we're talking about today here on the Middle East Report. So I want to encourage everybody to do that. Pastor Barry, we want to spend the final few minutes here on the Middle East Report to talk about prophetic things and talk about where you see things right now, how things are lining up prophetically. You know, you got Turkey, Russia, Iran, there's a big alliance there. Has things changed? Are we closer to things lining up? I mean, give us your perspective prophetically of how you see things going on.
Well, I think there's two major things that are going to be interesting to watch in the not too distant future. One is Syria. We know we've got a prophecy in Isaiah 17:1 about the destruction of Damascus that is yet to be fulfilled. And I know there are those who say that was fulfilled by Sennacherib back in the 6th century BC, but I don't think that holds much weight simply because there is still a Damascus today. So when it says it's going to cease from being a city and become a ruinous heap, that's exactly what it means. It will be, the implication there is it will be uninhabitable. Now, the interesting thing about the ouster of the Bashar al-Assad regime is that the group that has come in has its roots in al-Qaeda. And, you know, here you've got some radical changes happening within the country already. There's some current concern, even though, you know, part of their push, with at least within the hearing of the international community, has been dialogue, to talk with all groups, have meetings with Christians and other groups that may not be the mainstream of the population in the city, but just kind of a more, or in the country rather, but just kind of a more favorable approach to people who see things differently within the country. And yet, there's already talk of protests going on because the new caretaker government, the transitional government, has changed the curriculum for the new school year and turned everything from, you know, the general history of the area to the history of Islam. Everything now is Islamic. And so some of the concerns are that we're headed towards an Afghanistan type of rule. And, you know, if something like that does wind up taking place, and here you've got ISIS roots and affiliations within the rebel group, and now, you know, very clear ties to al-Qaeda. And this could lead to the destruction of Damascus, should this turn into the Islamic State of Syria, you know, and have a government much like the Taliban. So we'll see what happens there. But also, you know, here you've got that coalition force named in the Ezekiel war scenario with Russia, Turkey, Iran, Sudan, and Libya. And one of the things I've been watching, John, over the years recently is that, you know, there's been two of the participants who've been largely missing from the narrative, and that is Sudan and Libya. And yet within the past 6 months, both Russia and Turkey have made significant efforts to communicate and offer support to Libya and Sudan. So that piece, missing piece, so to speak, has been advanced significantly just within the last 6 months. So it's very likely that the destruction of Damascus will be the catalyst for the launch of the Ezekiel invasion. And, you know, so here we've got major changes in Syria. You've got advances to the coalition of the Ezekiel war scenario happening simultaneously. I also believe that it's necessary for the church to be removed, for that the lawless one to be revealed. So big things ahead, I think.
Well, they are, and it's our responsibility as a body of believers to be ready, to prepare ourselves and to be ready, you know, for the Lord's return. But not just to be ready, we have to be about the Father's business, Barry. We have to be out there for the kingdom of God as well. It's easy to, you know, for us just to sit back and say, well, all these prophetic things are happening, but we can't just sit back and not do anything. We have to push back against the darkness and just do what God's called us to do.
Yeah, we do, John. And that's interesting that you bring that up, because that's one of the things, you know, I like to focus on at prophecy conferences. I mean, prophecy is fascinating. It's amazing to be alive right now and watch things that were written, you know, thousands of years ago happening right before our eyes in an undeniable fashion. But I think one of the things I always try and draw attention to, you know, Amir Sarfati and I just taught the entire book of Revelation two times, once in the Mediterranean a couple of months ago, and then just last week, we were in the Caribbean on a cruise ship. We taught the whole book of Daniel and the whole book of Revelation in 10 sessions. And one of the things I think to draw people's attention to is, you know, the Bible makes it, I believe, quite clear that the church has to be removed before things move into that 70th week of Daniel, which is, you know, a time period of the wrath of God, which the church does not have an appointment with. But the question, I think, then comes, if you look at the book of Revelation and see the tribulation starting in Revelation 6:2 with the ride of the guy on the white horse with a covenant in his hand, and then the church is absent throughout the narrative all the way up to chapter 19, verse 11, when the church is seen then on white horses returning with Jesus, why did God want us to know all about what's going to be happening on the earth for a time that we're not going to be here? And I think what you just said is the answer. Because if we really understand what's going to go on this earth, when we are in heaven in the Father's house for 7 years awaiting our return with him, then that should be a motivation to us. It shouldn't just be information that we're gathering and seeing it fulfilled as a sense of excitement building in us. It should break our hearts for the people around us who aren't ready. And, you know, we know far more people who are unsaved than we do who are saved, because they're all around us. And therefore, God gave us this information so we would tell people how you can escape the things that are coming upon the earth, which is solely through a personal relationship with Christ.
Well, we want you, as you're listening to the Middle East Report, to take this conversation and let it be a motivation for you to share the love of God with those around you, because there are so many people who don't know the Lord, and you can share his love. You can share this information, and I want to tell you that if you don't understand prophecy, you don't understand the time of the signs or the chronology, all of that, I urge you to get this book from Pastor Barry. I always recommend this. We talk a lot about it because it is an excellent book, The Time of the Signs, A Chronology of Earth's Final Events. And Pastor Barry, just give us a real quick synopsis, because this book will really just help people kind of get their head around, you know, end times. It's a book for somebody like me who can't totally understand everything about prophecy, but then when I read something like this, like, okay, I get it.
Yeah, John, it's interesting because, you know, if we take the information that we have, one of the most important things, I think, is to look at Daniel chapter 12, verse 4, where Daniel is told, seal up the vision, you know, it's for the latter days. And what that implies is that there will be a generation that is going to have better prophetic clarity than the previous generations, you know, throughout actually a couple thousand years. And here we are today, like Hebrews 10:25 says, we can see the day approaching. The day, obviously, is a term associated with the tribulation period, the time of Jacob's trouble, the 70th week of Daniel are some of the titles assigned to that time period. And we're watching the precursors to much of what's going to take place and ultimately be fulfilled during the tribulation. And I think we have a marker that is set for us with the regathering of the Jews from around the world. And, you know, again, John, it just seems like anything that is prophetic, there's a multitude of opinions and interpretations on it. But I do believe, because of Joel 1:7, Hosea 9:10, and Jeremiah 9:13, which all state quite clearly that the fig tree is a descriptive phrase used for national Israel, different than spiritual Israel that we're grafted into, you know, the vine, we're grafted into the vine, the olive being representative of Israel in its spiritual condition. We are grafted into Israel. However, we are not grafted into national Israel, which is represented by the fig tree. So, you know, with the rebirth of the nation of Israel, I think we see the prophetic narrative beginning to advance. And that's where the book starts. It starts with the regathering of the Jews scattered by God himself all over the world. And one of the most important things, I think, John, is to maybe back up a little bit further than where we generally start when we think about the regathering of the Jews to their eternally covenanted national homeland, which includes Jerusalem as its eternal capital, is back in chapter 36, before the dry bones vision, where Ezekiel is asked a series of questions by the Lord himself. Well, the Lord says in Ezekiel 36, 21 and 22, he tells Israel, I'm not doing this for your sake, but I'm doing it for my sake. For every day that you, and I'm paraphrasing, every day that you, my chosen people, were outside of the national homeland that I gave you, my name is being profaned. And he says, I'm not bringing you back for your sake. I'm bringing you back for my name's sake. And this is why I think we have to make sure that we understand Israel's role in prophetic events in the last days, specifically as kind of a launch pad into the final stage of the prophetic narrative as it relates to the church age. And then we'll, you know, the book will move through the potential chronology. And, you know, I think one thing we always have to remember is that the best form of prophetic interpretation is fulfillment. I mean, we can look back and see things historically clearly, but, you know, possibly I think the destruction of Damascus will launch the Ezekiel War. The way the Ezekiel War ends, I believe, because it's God who, you know, sends this flooding rain and hail and the great earthquake. That seems to be something that will take place after the rapture, maybe before the tribulation, but definitely after the rapture. And I think that will be the catalyst, the destruction of radical Islam represented by these five nations. The vast majority of radical Islam is going to allow for the man of sin to say, hey, you know what? Why don't we let the Jews rebuild their temple, which is a prophetic necessity for the abomination of desolation to take place. So again, you know, just kind of walking through, the book doesn't just end with, you know, what happens with Israel, the Ezekiel War scenario, but it takes us all the way through the Great White Throne Judgment and into the New Jerusalem and the way things are going to unfold chronologically.
That's Pastor Barry Stagner, Senior Pastor of Calvary Central OC in Costa Mesa, California. I want to encourage you to get that book, The Time of the Signs, A Chronology of Earth's Final Events, and you can get that online wherever you get your books. A few days ago, President Trump met with the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, and they discussed a lot of different things. One of the things that the Prime Minister of Israel made clear is that Israel will see total victory over Hamas and that Hamas will never, ever govern the Gaza Strip again. I want to encourage you to get a podcast of the show. We're on all the major podcast platforms. Just search for The Middle East Report. We're on Spotify, Podbean, and many other podcast platforms out there. And of course, you can go to afr.net and download it there. That's The Middle East Report. I'm John Riley. Thanks for listening.